Welcome to Managing AML. I am Dr. Pinkal Desai, and today I'm going to discuss new treatment paradigms in AML, a focus on maintenance therapy. Before we begin the presentation, I would like to present a hypothetical case that we will take an audience poll. 68-year-old patient in good health presents with a white cell count of 30,000 and is diagnosed with AML with normal cytogenetics. Rest of the myeloid mutation panel shows a DNMT3A mutation. The patient is treated with 7+3 and achieved a MRD negative complete remission. What is the next step in treatment? Cytarabine consolidation for 4 cycles, cytarabine consolidation followed by oral azacitidine maintenance, allogeneic transplant followed by oral azacitidine maintenance. I'm going to now review some of the data on maintenance therapy in AML. As you all are aware, we have an ELN prognostic classification of AML, which divides it into favorable, intermediate, and adverse risk based on cytogenetics and molecular markers. And this helps us decide what a therapy plan is made post-induction in terms of whether these patients go to transplant or not. In short, induction chemotherapy for fit AML therapy includes AML patients include 7+3 based chemotherapy and an assessment of bone marrow response on day 14 through 21 with consideration for reinduction if there is residual disease. The goal is to gain remission, which is the return of normal hematopoiesis and bone marrow blast being less than 5%. Once induction is complete and a patient achieves a remission, favorable risk patients are usually treated with chemotherapy alone and do not go for stem cell transplant based on a higher or equivalent chance of survival with chemotherapy consolidation compared to transplant. While intermediate and poor risk patients, we consider stem cell transplant, but some patients, depending on personal choice or non-availability of donors, can go through consolidation as well. So post this, what do we have once we complete the consolidation? What was the standard of care in the past? Was just follow-up. Maintenance was not standard of care until more recent data. Now we know, why is maintenance an important thing to consider? Because we know that patients in remission are still MRD positive, in a lot of patients are still MRD positive, and that is it's an important predictive of early relapse. If the patient has an MRD more than 0.1% by flow, as you see in this data, both for survival and disease-free survival, MRD negative patients have better survival and disease-free survival compared to MRD positive. So can we do something that would actually reduce the risk of relapse by giving more maintenance therapy and perhaps helping these patients who are MRD positive? And would it be helpful in MRD negative patients as well? Because as we know, MRD measurement is just a test, and based on the most available testing, you can say somebody's positive or negative, but in reality, MRD negative patients may still have minute residual populations. Now, oral azacitidine was a drug that was designed to have a distinct pharmacokinetic and dynamic profile from injectable azacitidine. So these are not two bioequivalent drugs. The idea of oral azacitidine was to give a 14-day cycle, which gives a prolonged pharmacodynamic effect over a 28-day cycle. And the idea was to give a slow exposure and DNA hypomethylation over time to benefit sort of the residual disease. The Quasar AML-001 study randomized patients to maintenance versus not. The way the study was designed, that patients over 55 years of old who had de novo or secondary AML, intermediate or poor risk cytogenetics, and were not candidates for stem cell transplant, were randomized 1-to-1 after completion of their primary therapy, which would include 7N3 and consolidation, to either receiving oral azacitidine 14 days out of a 28-day cycle in continuation cycles versus placebo given at the same way. The treatments were continued. Bone marrow assessment was made every 3 cycles to assess for MRD and remission status, and treatment continued in both arms until end of study. The primary endpoint of this was overall survival. And as you look at this data, these were published in New England Journal of Medicine, giving oral azacitidine had a significant overall survival advantage, 24.7 months versus 14.8 months, which is the placebo arm. Similarly, for relapse-free survival, oral azacitidine was statistically significant over placebo, 10 versus 4.8 months. If you look at 1 and 2 year survival rates, again, patients in the oral azacitidine arm, 73% were alive at 1 year and 51% at 2 year, compared to placebo, which is 56 and 37%. Looking at various subgroups of ages, sex, WHO AML classification, prior history of MDS or not, whether they got consolidation after 7N3 or not, cytogenetically, all of this and MRD positivity, you could see that the all of these subgroups favor the oral azacitidine arm. And this led to the approval of this drug, which is currently now approved for this. The drug, the indication is anybody who has not had, who has had intensive chemotherapy and has not gotten to stem cell transplant for whatever reason, whether not recommended because of comorbidities or patient preference. And these are for intermediate and poor risk cytogenetics. Now, what is interesting is, the question is, does this drug help in MRD positive or MRD negative patients? So as we know, MRD assessment was done every 3 cycles on study. MRD positivity and negativity was defined by an ELN risk more than 0.1% versus less than 0.1%. And the study also looked at MRD response. How many of patients converted MRD positive to negative on the drug, time to MRD response, and duration of MRD. Within the MRD evaluable cohort, both groups, oral aza versus placebo, if you look at the characteristic of these patients, they were pretty similar across before they actually started their study drug, showing that the randomization was successful. If you look at now survival in both groups, MRD negative and positive, the drug showed survival advantage in both situations, 30 versus 24 months in MRD negative and 14 versus 10 months in MRD positive response. Relapse-free survival was also similarly prolonged in patients who had oral azacitidine versus placebo, and this was true for both MRD negative and MRD positive subgroups. This showed that treatment with oral azacitidine had a significant benefit irrespective of the MRD status, and this was based on a multivariable analysis. Moreover, looking at patients who had an MRD response, how many of them had MRD positive and then became negative, 37% of patients on the oral AZA became MRD negative on study versus 19% on placebo, which is basically residual, chemotherapy negativity over time. And also, if you look at the timing, less than 6 months versus more than 6 months, people on oral azacitidine therapy continued to have these MRD and negativity responses over time with prolonged use of the drug, while that dropped in the placebo arm. So most of the effect was early on from the chemotherapy. The median duration of MRD negativity was also higher in the oral azacitidine arm compared to placebo. Now, the big question is, sure, we're improving survival, but at what cost? There was recent analysis presented in the ASH 2020, where there was measurement of quality of life measures on the drug. And if you look at the fatigue scale here, both placebo, which is gray, and oral azacitidine, which is pink, looks like they are overlapping. Longitudinal analysis over many cycles showed essentially overlapping scores. Health utility index was also equivalent, so patients were not getting hospitalized or more on one arm versus the other. Rate of clinically meaningful deterioration from previous cycle was also pretty much not significant between the arm, except for one cycle over here. But overall, if you can say that this is, drug is well tolerated compared to placebo. So now we know that oral azacitidine is a maintenance strategy for patients who are older, have had chemotherapy, and not gone to transplant. Now, what about other maintenance strategy? We know that FLT3 AML has targetable agents. We know FLT3 has a high risk of relapse, but some patients are not transplanted with FLT3, and what could they potentially get? Now, there are several FLT3 inhibitors that are currently undergoing clinical trials, as noted on this slide. I'm not going to go into details with this, but briefly, we know that the RATIFY study design led to the approval of midostaurin for FLT3 mutated AML, where midostaurin was given with induction, consolidation, and maintenance for 12 cycle post treatment. This included both post-transplant and also patients who didn't go for transplant got maintenance as well. Midostaurin improved overall survival in patients compared to placebo, and this benefit was seen across all FLT3 subgroups, TKD, ITD high, and ITD low. Moreover, its impact in the post-transplant area was also seen, where if the patients did get midostaurin post-transplant, their survival was better, which is the blue arm compared to the red arm, which is placebo patients who did not get midostaurin. So if somebody does not go for a stem cell transplant, FLT3 maintenance strategy is there and available. And I'll discuss a little bit down the line on which one to choose from. Switching gears a little bit on another aspect of maintenance therapy, which is post-transplant maintenance therapy. There was a trial called SORMAIN trial that looked at sorafenib maintenance after allo-SCT that showed that patients who got sorafenib had superior survival as well as recurrent relapse-free survival compared to placebo. So the concept of FLT3 maintenance post-transplant is pretty well established, and most centers would give it now. This was another study similarly looking at sorafenib maintenance post-allo-SCT with benefit seen to the sorafenib arm for all incidents for relapse, leukemia-free survival, and overall survival. In addition, there are other FLT3 inhibitors that are currently undergoing clinical trials for post-transplant maintenance, and this includes gilteritinib and continuation of some of the frontline FLT3 agents like crenolinib. Another interesting study that was also published was the combination of decitabine plus recombinant human granulocyte colony stimulating factor, where the combination of the two compared to placebo led to decreased incidence of relapse, as evidenced by this red arm compared to the blue, which is the non-G decitabine arm. So this is an interesting concept as well. And in the post-transplant setting, several other maintenance strategies are being used. For example, other FLT3 inhibitors, as I had mentioned, IDH inhibitors for patients who have an IDH mutation. And also clinical trials are currently ongoing for using hypomethylating agents and venetoclax, both in the setting of post-chemotherapy without transplant and in the post-transplant setting. So we are yet to find out whether all of these strategies are going to be incremental or more beneficial than the currently approved oral azacitidine maintenance. So if you look at the, the evolving paradigm of post-transplant or patients who have not had a transplant, and what do we do in their maintenance strategy? So our focus here, patients eligible for intensive chemotherapy, if you have a good risk like core binding factor, AML, chemotherapy is the standard of care. There is no maintenance after these. These were not patients, these patients were not included in the Quasar trial, which led to the Orelaza approval. Favorable risk cytogenetics were excluded. So for these patients, the standard of care still is observation. For patients who have a FLT3 mutation or therapy-related AML, or sort of the intermediate, you decide whether this patient needs to go for a stem cell transplant or maintenance. If the patient decides that there is no SCT or no stem cell transplant, then if you have a FLT3 mutation, FLT3 inhibitors are available for maintenance therapy, and most people would actually choose that because the biology of the disease is driven by the FLT3 mutation. But in patients who have a very low FLT3 allele ratio of FLT3 TKD mutations, for example, oral azacitidine is an option. In patients who have therapy-related, again, oral azacitidine would be the maintenance option. If the patient are transplanted, then the post-transplant maintenance is a complicated decision point depending on their mutations and other aspects that we discussed in the post-transplant maintenance strategy. For patients who are not eligible for intensive chemotherapy, there is no true maintenance to some extent, because all of these therapies are continuation cycles and they are sort of maintenance in its own right, because you just keep taking these cycles until the patient relapses, which most people, older patients who are ineligible for intensive chemotherapy and not transplanted would. So there's no true maintenance strategy, and that's not where oral azacitidine has been studied or approved. So now that we've heard all of the data that I presented, let's go back to our question and see if we can get to the correct answer. 68-year-old patient in good health presents with a white cell count of 30K. Patient has AML with normal cytogenetics with a DNMT3A mutation and is treated with 7N3 and achieved an MRD negative remission. Please check which answers might be correct. So now let's go through the data and this question. So this patient is by ELN risk intermediate cytogenetics with intermediate molecular markers. So these patients should be considered for allogeneic stem cell transplant. So C, allogeneic transplant is a correct answer. However, many patients do not go for a stem cell transplant or decide not to go for a stem cell transplant due to comorbidities. And in that situation, cytarabine consolidation followed by oral azacitidine maintenance would be another correct answer. Cytarabine consolidation alone would not be standard because of survival advantage, which is seen with oral azacitidine. Allogeneic transplant followed by oral azacitidine maintenance, again, would not be correct because this is not the setting in which oral azacitidine was used. This study only used oral azacitidine in patients who did not go for stem cell transplant, and its use in the post-transplant period, there's no data on its use, so that would be incorrect as well. Now, to make this a bit complicated, you know, what if this patient had a FLT3 TKD mutation? Now, that brings into another layer of complexity, because technically FLT3 maintenance therapy is not an approved indication, but many people believe that if the biology of the disease is driven by FLT3, that FLT3 could be given as a maintenance strategy. And many clinical trials are using the strategy of post-chemotherapy FLT3 maintenance. So in this setting, if you have a TKD, would the maintenance be oral azacitidine, or would it be the continuation of a FLT3 inhibitor like midostaurin? that was started at the beginning of the patient's induction based on the RATIFY study. And I think the answer to that question is not really yet answered. We don't know which is a better strategy in that situation of the three or oral azacitidine, but this is why more and more data and deeper analysis of the current clinical trials is important to come to the right decision. But until then, for somebody who is in this bucket, these B and C would be the correct answer.